Well, it sure is, folks. This is Kevin Annett here. Here We Stand. Kevin Annett, Eagle Strong Voice here, regular host. It's August 29th. And what a revolutionary idea that is. The land was made for everyone, not just the politicians, not just for the wealthy string pullers, but everybody. Now, when Woody Guthrie wrote that many years ago, almost a century now, it was as revolutionary then as it is now. We have a choice to either have the land for everyone and govern ourselves, or let the few tyrants tell us what to think, what to put on our face, what to inject in our arm, etc. Now, we know the choice. This show is for those of you who have said no to this tyrannical system and want to learn how to fight back. From our own experience, murderbydecree.com gives you background, republicofcanada.ca, under whose jurisdiction we operate, the former Dominion of Canada, now under common law, Republic jurisdiction. Today, we're going to talk about an ongoing issue of what people in Canada should do on September 20th when the federal government slash COVID police state tyranny has announced there's going to be a federal election. Well, we know from experience that to vote for the present system is to hand away your authority to a foreign monarch, meaning the queen, so-called Queen of England. It's to endorse the COVID tyranny, the police state. It's to commit treason by allowing both the Liberals and the Conservatives to continue their reign while selling out the country to China. And also, it's to vote with a gun to your head under the present conditions of the police state. So we're going to explore more of that today, but I'm going to be doing that with a very good friend of mine, Steve Schellen. He's going to be on the air in a few minutes. Now, Steve and I are veterans. We have gone through an experience over many decades of not only struggling to do what's right, but then facing the organized power of the state, in my case, the church as well, in trying to crush us. We have been through the experience of what it means to be on the front lines, to be blacklisted, to be censored, and to see the society the way it really is. Now, there's a difference there between learning something from your own experience and learning it off the internet or a book. And this is part of the difficulty these days in working with people because, you know, it was often a comment I found on our Republic assemblies when we formed them. People would get up and say, I'm so angry about this COVID stuff. 6 months ago, I was never interested in politics. Now, this is great. There's this whole new generation of people getting involved, but they're very naive. They don't have the experience, and they're easily misled. And so I really appreciate Steve being on the air today because he is a veteran as well. And I was joking with him earlier, we should form a kind of a 12-step group or a support group for whistleblowers and people who've been blacklisted. We're going to get into that today, and especially in relation to something also close to my heart, a play I wrote called The Land of No One, which links the medical genocide that went on for many years in Canada aimed at Native children and Native people generally in the residential schools and the infamous Indian hospitals where they experimented and killed generations of children in their drug testing and other experiments. The connection between that history and the present COVID police state, that's what my play The Land of No One talks about. Twice over the last 3 years now, we tried to produce this play. First, we got it all right to the point of having readings of the play, selecting actors. That was in Duncan, British Columbia on Vancouver Island. And then suddenly everyone backed off without explanation. We subsequently found out that a chief, local bank council puppet chief called Fred Thorne, put the kibosh on the whole play because it had mentioned how the chiefs were bringing their own reservation children into the Indian hospitals for experimentation. So, of course, Fred's father who did that didn't like that, and neither did Fred. So he used his pressure to make sure that that production of our play, The Land of No One, never saw the light of day. Now, what's strange is the next year I went to Toronto, found a group of 9 actors and others who wanted to work on the play, and they too were initially very enthusiastic. One woman said, all of Canada has to see this play. And then they too dropped away without explanation. So obviously there's stuff, the content of the play, which we're going to talk about today, is striking right at the present COVID police state. And the characters involve a guy called Oliver Pierpoint, who's a former United Church missionary doctor working in the Nanaimo Indian Hospital. These are all real stories, real people with pseudonyms, and real events that went on. And the truth of what he did, the genocide there against children, medical genocide, comes out and he has to face his wife and daughter over the real truth, almost a metaphor for Canada trying to ignore their own history and yet someday having to face the music about it. So that's the content of the play. And like I say, it's very much a link to today. Now, you can read all of that. Murderbydecree.com is all of that evidence about the Indian hospitals and everything. Republicofcanada.ca. And don't forget, these times, weeks coming, is a time for us to say we have drawn a line under international law and our own domestic republic. We are not endorsing elections. We cannot vote. We cannot pay taxes to this criminal regime. And one of the things that's going to come out, and just before I bring Steve on, I want to mention this, we are issuing a press statement, a TV interview I did recently, and also a YouTube broadcast about announcements coming up. I can tell you a few things that will be announced. On September 8th, it's the first anniversary of our Common Law Republic Assembly's passing a law that applies everywhere in Canada, and it banned all COVID measures. It said masking, distancing, quarantine, and mandatory vaccinations are illegal under the laws of a republic. Anyone who tries to enforce them on us is guilty of a crime and can be arrested and tried in our common law courts. That went out September 8th, 2020. Well, on September 8th, 2021, our answer to the so-called vaccine passports is the republic will be issuing their own passports for their citizens. You take out citizenship, you can have a Republic of Canada passport, and you say, look, if you try to impose these measures on us, we will consider this an act of war against our nation and its citizens, and we'll take action accordingly to defend ourselves and stop these measures. So that'll all be coming out. Keep an eye on it. Probably by the middle of this week, it'll be out. Go to republicofcanada.ca under breaking news, and all of that will be there. Well, on that note, Steve, are you with us?
I hope you're with us.
Okay. I'll wait for Don to bring Steve on. And, okay, maybe you could try that number, Don. Okay, thank you. Okay, so apparently we are getting hold of Steve Shellen. And Steve, by the way, was an actor in Hollywood. You might have seen him in a movie called A River Runs Through It by Robert Redford, the director. And he was up there, and then some things happened. I'll let him explain that to you about what happened in his life. And he went through an incredibly similar experience to what I did, where you go up against, the power of the system, and suddenly you become persona non grata, couldn't work, couldn't get any employment, the usual thing. So, we're going to hear from Steve in a minute. Okay. Just hold on, I'm going to check here. Are you up?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay. Hi, Steve. It's really good to have you with us. Sorry about the technical follow-up. Let me just start by asking you to explain to the folks a little bit about who you are and how you know me, and we'll take it from there.
Yeah, geez, that's a good question. Well, what happened is, in about 1995, my life took a very I don't even want to say tragic, because in so many ways it was enlightening, so I wouldn't say it was tragic, but yeah, my life, I went on a, it really took a crazy turn. And then, from about 95 to 2000, yeah, I was track followed, death threatened, harassed, and all because I wanted to know who beat up my wife and threatened my 4-year-old son. At the same time, in 1995 when it started, I had just signed papers on a film company called Lionsgate Entertainment, which you may have heard of. And I actually didn't want to call it Lionsgate. My partner that came in after I was, bringing awareness to the production company, my partner was a lawyer in Vancouver, and he was adamant that we call it Lionsgate, and he'd raised venture capital money. So I sort of acquiesced after, and I was like, okay, we'll call it Lionsgate, Never thinking anything. I just wanted to have, a cool production company, make sort of independent, cool films, go to film festivals, buy films. My one sort of genius idea, I guess, was Canada, at that time, did not have much in the way of film distribution. So I wanted to create a film distribution company. And I'll be honest, like, I didn't want to necessarily play by the books. I wanted to, because I met someone, Omar Kuzmacek, who set up distribution for, like, the first Christopher Reeve Superman movie. That film was independently financed. And so Omar Kuzmacek, who I got to know, he had, him and Susskind had set up offshore distribution for Superman. Superman was one of the few blockbuster films, maybe in the last 50 years, that had no studio attached. And so they raised the money independently, made this, you know, great action-adventure film. It is a pretty good film if you see it again. And yet they had no studio attached or anything. And he and Susskind had set up offshore distribution. And that probably doesn't make much sense to some of the people listening, but yeah,
what is
it means you
in
don't
terms
make
of what happened to you,
country.
Is that, yeah, is that, okay, you were a maverick and everything, but tell me what actually caused the break in the, you know, the blacklisting that you experienced.
Yeah, okay, so what happened is I was away in Los Angeles. I had a farm in Canada for a number of different reasons, but one of the main reasons is I didn't want my kids growing up in L.A., which hopefully yeah. people can understand. I wanted my kids growing up in a relatively normal environment. They were like 3 and 2, and we sold the house in L.A. And I, like I say, there's other reasons, and, you know, I don't want to go into that one, but like Valina Houston, lawsuits, all kinds of goofy stuff that's unreal, so it's not worth describing. But we moved back to the farm, and we're living very happy on the farm. The children love the farm. I had 2 dogs, 2 barns, 2 ponds, and I was in some ways living this idyllic life. Well, I'd gone to LA and I came home unexpectedly, and I saw bruises on my wife at the time's face. And so I, not even anticipating any kind of craziness, I just basically, I thought it could have been a coloring book, it could have been a plank in the barn. I asked her, geez, how'd you get that bruise? Because she had a huge bruise on her face that she tried to cover with makeup, and she never, ever wore makeup on the farm. If we had done something in you know, Toronto, or, you know, we'd gone to a film premiere or something, yeah, she'd wear makeup. But generally speaking, she never wore makeup. And I noticed this cover-up makeup or this makeup on her face. I'm like, that's weird. She never wears makeup. And it's like, oh, wow, you know, you got a bruise. Like, how'd you get the bruise? Well, she went off on a tangent screaming that I was insane and nuts. And I'm like, geez, I just want to know how you got the bruise, you know. That was the beginning of everything. Then later I found out that she had been beat up in front of my 2 children. She claimed to have been was a prostitute. And these are years when I'm making good money. I co-starred in a film with Brad Pitt and Robert Redford directing. Like, it wasn't like I was down and out and it's like, oh, how are we going to make ends meet? Well, I have to be a prostitute. It wasn't one of those scenarios.
Well,
so
what happened in the wake of that incident?
That was the beginning of what I discovered was ritual abuse, MK Ultra, programmed assassins, sex slaves. Like, you know, and I say that not in any light way. Like, I say that meaning don't discount something until you've lived through it. And so that was the beginning in 95, and my company Lionsgate was stolen from me, and that was the beginning of this trajectory of like being
right.
hunted, followed, death threatened, assassin attempts, and
yep.
and really, really blacklisted and slandered.
Well, you know, I was going to mention that the last time we actually sat down together was 8 years ago. You did that famous interview, now it's going ballistic all over the planet. Who is Kevin Annett? We were sitting in the garden in Nanaimo, and it was the best interview I ever did with anyone.
We had a
great conversation.
Okay.
You know, but
yeah,
the scene of the crime,
you
Nanaimo.
Know what I related to you, Kevin, was that, like, I'm looking at what you're exposing and what you're doing, and then I see all the slander and all the attacks on you, and that was what, man? That must have been like 10 or 12 years ago, right?
Oh, it's constant.
So I'm looking at all that you've, like, all that's being said about you online, and, you know, in a selfish way or, you know, like, coming from my perspective anyway, I'm looking at this guy, Kevin, who's trying to expose residential schools and schooling and what was done with, you know, Indian kids. I say Indian just because I can never figure out, is it Aboriginal, is it Native? Like, even the Indians call themselves Indian. So, like, you know, I'm not politically correct because I can't figure out what I'm supposed to say that way. But
no, don't worry about it.
Yeah. So then there's corruption inside of Native communities, like the chiefs, right?
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, I saw the slander being directed at you, and I thought, who is this guy? You know, like, and why are they going after this guy so hard? This is sort of like me, but mine was sort of limited to the film industry, and I'm a loser, I'm schizophrenic, you know. That's what mine was kind of limited to, but you, on the other hand, you were like, wow, it's across the board. It's like, you know, just this complete assault, attack on you, your character,
totally.
Who you are. So, yeah, and then we ran into you, man. We were in Nanaimo, and I think Kim was in a lineup at Sobeys or whatever the grocery store was, and she looked around and she went, geez, I think that's that Kevin Annett guy, you know, and I'm like, I don't think I was even there. I think she called me wherever I was. And
right.
She's like, I think
but it was
ran
a,
into this
the good thing about
Kevin
it is that,
guy. I'm like, seriously? Talk to him, man. Tell me want to meet him, you know. And
you
that's
know old,
when we met, and I get that sit down with you at Debbie Newhook's place, where I basically, I was not trying to, I was trying to make something objective. I wasn't even really trying to say, you know, Kevin's an angel. He's never, like, he's perfect.
No.
Like, I wasn't even, I didn't have
insight.
Any goal. I just wanted to sit down with you and go, like, who the F is Kevin Annett? What's going on? What do you believe? You know, it was just an open, honest.
It was really good. Let me ask you.
It wasn't genius. All I was doing was like, boy, people say all this crap about anyone that's, I guess, what's targeted, if people know what that is. But, like, if you're on the list, they're going to attack you every which way they can.
Yeah.
And yet, no one, people will just believe it with no evidence, nothing to back it up. It's just like, oh, Kevin Annett's crazy.
See,
okay, all right, I accept.
See, let me ask
Kevin
you this:
crazy.
Like, when I said the scene of the crime, we're talking about the play I wrote, which you've read, and very interested in helping to produce. But give your listeners here a sense of what you think of the play and why it's relevant today in our COVID police state.
Because it's everything today. It's. What they did to the Indians, the Native community, the Aboriginal community, what they did back then with their experimentation, the residential schooling, this is now being shoved out to every one of us. And it's not just white people. It's whoever you are. I don't even know if the black community realizes they're part of the bus, too. You know, like, we are all on this runaway train where they are gonna, like, they're gonna control everything we think, feel, and there's lots of reasons we can get into why I believe that's true, but, like, They are rolling it out. What they did with the Aboriginals is being done to all of us, all of us. And it's so important that people go back and read, like, your play or your book. And it's like, wow, this is not just, you know, this is not just the Native community. This isn't just the Aboriginal Canadian people. This is being rolled out for all of us.
Let me just...
And here's the thing I said to Kim. You know, when the Nazis made an agreement with the Zionists, and yeah, there's non-Jewish Zionists. I'm not anti-Semitic. I don't hate Jewish people. I really don't. Most of my girlfriends have been Jewish or black. But, you know, what the Zionists allowed to happen to the Jews in Germany under Hitler's rule, do you think it's any different today? Like, they will sacrifice what's considered their own, but their own is limited to a small pocket of people that are part of their, you know, their club. So, yeah, of course they killed Jews in Germany, but you think that Rothschild and company cared about them? No, that was part of the plan. We're going to also to form, you know, Israel, right? But anybody that looks at history, they know what that is. But
Steve, let me just jump in. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Let me just jump in for a minute. You mentioned the play and people can read it. For listeners, if you go to Amazon.com, put in my name, Kevin Annett, you'll see all of my books, and we've actually published the play, The Land of No One. And you may find this interesting, Steve. There was a theater group in California, in Sacramento, that said they wanted to produce it. They read through it, and then they got to the part at the end where this Dr. Pierpont is talking about the experiments they were doing on Native kids, how they were learning how to microchip human beings using the Indian children in the Nanaimo Indian Hospital, which is accurate. That's based on hard evidence we have and testimonies from medical personnel who worked there. And they said, as soon as they saw the reference to microchip and vaccinations, they said, sorry, we can't produce the play. I mean, this is, you know, the censorship, the built-in cop in people's heads where they shut down as soon as they see any criticism of vaccinations or microchipping, right?
Yeah, well, Big Pharma played a big role in what happened in the residential schools, right? I mean...
Yeah, Pfizer...
Yeah, it's all about, I mean, ultimately, it's all about mind control from their perspective. And this goes back to, God, the Fabian Society, Tavistock. It's all the same, man. All they want to do is affect how we think. But they just want to get rid of us for a number of reasons. But, yeah, your play is brilliant, man. I want anyone listening that's got, I don't know, I don't want to say piles of money, but... Anyone listening that really wants to be involved, they should contact you. And you know what? I will do it for free. I'll write it. I mean, you've written it, but I'll adapt it. I'll do whatever I have to do. I'll certainly play the role of Oliver. I think Kim would be a fabulous director, my wife. She's done numerous theater productions. She's a great director, way better than me, because she understands theater. I've directed theater, but I'm not the expert that she is. I mean, she's fabulous. And you know what? Man, people need to see this. And, you know, we talked about it earlier. It's like, geez, I don't get why the Indian community, which has been so hard done by, they've been so maligned by the Canadian and the U.S. government. They've been... like riding around on trains and you get bonuses for killing 100 natives and you're on a train and they're just like, it's unbelievable what's been done to that community. And yet, I want everyone to know that I will do almost anything to get the play made. I love your play, man. I emphatically endorse anyone. Read the play and then you decide if it's worth, you know, helping us get this launched, whether it's you come and work as someone backstage or, you know, you give us some money so we can get it, you know, produced. None of us are looking to make money. All we really, and I think you're included here, Kevin, because that's how you feel, we just want to see it made. We want to see people, we want to give people a chance to see and experience what it is. And the beauty about the play, it's not even just about what happened back then.
No.
If you can objectively step back and see the forest for the trees, it's really about what the world is going through right now. Like,
absolutely.
Yeah, you know, I can't say that any more emphatically than that. Like, yeah, that was terrible what happened then. Well, what's happening right now and what they're trying to roll out, it's the
Bit of that, Steve. There's five characters in the play. Dr. Oliver Pierpont, a former United Church missionary doctor, his wife Adele, their daughter Fern, a guy who's a freelance reporter called Josh Bennett, and a native survivor of the experiments named Sheila Ambrose. Those are the five main characters, and it's almost like I wrote that in order to almost cover everybody in Canada who would, you know, be a, you know, who's really, it's a metaphor for the whole country. Right. Like, can we look at our own crimes? Can we look at our own crimes? No, because they do what they did in Kamloops. You know, they say, oh, we're going to investigate this mass grave, and then they destroy it behind a whole media spin and put little shoes of children on church steps as some kind of gesture when they're not trying anybody for these crimes. They're not charging anyone. We're trying to break through that big lie. And the only way you do it with the hard truth, and this play is based on a lot of hard evidence we have, you know, like I said, at murderbydecree.com.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, people need to read it, and then they'll get an understanding of what it is, what it represents. And it's not just about feeling sorry for, like, you know, Aboriginal people in Canada. It's really not that. And it's not about feeling sorry for yourself, but it's understanding what this evil is capable of. And that's maybe the biggest part of the play that I took away from it. Your play's great. People need to understand what that is. And, you know, look at all these years later. God, you were exposing this stuff, what, 20, 25 years ago? You know, you were getting beat up, just like I was, but you were getting beat up as bad or worse. I mean, and all you were trying to do was, you know, what were you trying to expose in the very, very beginning?
The immediate, you know, we all kind of go through stages in our evolution, of course. And I was naive enough to think that, well, there had been some mistake. The church had done wrong, and now, you know, is there a chance to make it right? But I didn't realize, I mean, give you an example. A journalist called Sarah Webster started digging around a few years ago, and she found out that one of the things that I didn't know that I was exposing is the very guys who fired me from the United Church are part of this thing called the 12 Mile Club, which is a child trafficking network on Vancouver Island. They're all United Church missionaries who went around on the Thomas Crosby, the mission boat, to all these Indian villages, would grab kids, rape them, kill them. I mean, it's part of this whole network. And we've had former people talk about it. We've had police admit that it goes on. But I stumbled over those toes without even realizing that, right? And then I wonder why they spend $300,000 throwing me out of the United Church, breaking up my family.
Yeah.
You know, it's starting an RCMP fund.
But you know what? When you tell me your story, I feel like you were a young minister in Port Alberni, and all you did, really, to me, and you had a young family, all you did was, like, you were outraged about someone offering you a child within your, within the church community. And so you went to the head of the United Church in BC and said, this has just happened. This has to be dealt with. And then they all turned the tables on you. That's insane. You should have been given a medal or something, or not even a medal. Like, all you were doing was telling the truth and trying to expose wrongdoing.
Yeah, well, you know, the amazing thing, Steve, is that it isn't even that overt stuff. It's the subtle stuff now, how, like, I use the example of the shutting down of the play twice during production. What is it that can cause nine very enthusiastic people to suddenly not only cut off contact, but not say why, never have contact again? It's always the same pattern, like a computer program in their head to act that way. And that's why the play talks about mind control and how people's thoughts right now are being modulated through the internet technology and their iPads and the microchip thing, which allows them to basically become a human receiver of whatever is pumped into them by the system, right?
Absolutely. You look around and I really think, geez, these people, it's almost like they don't even have control of their own thoughts and feelings anymore.
They don't. They don't. That's the point.
But that sounds crazy to, like, you know, the average person, because they can't even imagine.
I don't think it sounds crazy.
If you take into consideration, like we talked about earlier, if you take into consideration the fact that, you know, the bad guys, for lack of a better word, they're like probably 30 to 40 years in advance of us in terms of technology, right? That's been proven. Like, they're so far ahead of us. The only guy that sort of kept up and was really on the mark was Tesla. And they, you know, Tesla dice broke, you know, blah, blah, blah. There's still his inventions, everything. Tesla was dealing with time travel and all kinds of stuff. But he didn't just, you know, fantasize or theorize about it. He actually proved a lot of this. Like,
okay, but, you know, our point about mind modulation.
Go check out Tesla and see what he was talking about.
The thing is, Steve, about mind modulation is that it's all been proven, and I think people can accept that it goes on, that, you know, that's been the focus of all the military research, you know, in the residential schools and elsewhere for over almost three quarters of a century. They've been perfecting a way to how to control human consciousness, and that's chilling part. At the back of the play, right at the end, there's a very chilling encounter between the reporter and the doctor. And the doctor's laying it all out for him. He's saying, look, we've developed the technology now through iPads and that to modulate the energy of the human brain and put in any thoughts or emotions we like. And, so we have controlled not just the thinking of individuals, but entire societies, how they think.
Right.
And that is our reality now.
I know. I actually see proof of that everywhere. But again, I can't tell Joe Public, oh my God, do you realize you're under mind control? No. They're not gonna, oh, you're a crazy person, you read too much sci-fi, or you saw that movie with Tom Cruise.
Right.
No, this stuff, it's documented, you can find it. Right now, I gotta say the Havana syndrome. There's all kinds of info on the Havana syndrome. It was the American embassy, I believe, in Havana, and all these people fell ill, and they were being attacked by what almost everyone agrees is directed energy weapons.
Right.
Right?
Well, that's the point.
It's been going
directed
on
energy weapons,
for decades, man. This isn't
they're
new.
They're the most commonly produced weapon now are directed energy weapons. And, It's not a big stretch for people to know this, but there's a difference between knowing something and acting on it. And that's what I found when we, like, I use the example of when we set up these assemblies over the last year, over 40 of them across the country. When you ask people to go from the point of passing a law saying we're against these COVID measures and they're outlawed to actually trying to enforce it, everyone gets wet feet. They don't want to take action. They want to talk about it, and they're just remain part of the problem by doing that. So
what are the cowards? What happened to the real men and women? Like, how did we all become so cowardly?
Well, it's been a devolution for a number of decades.
Yeah, it could be being affected by all this stuff. I mean, our water that we drink, let's face it, if you're doing geoengineering, all that stuff, the aluminum, the barium, the sodium, like santri, what is it? Anyway, all those chemicals are being ingested by us because it's in our water. It rains on our, on everything, our water supply, right? And then on top of that, our food is contaminated pretty much. And then, you know, there's so many levels of the nanoparticles coming in our body. Oh, but no one, they all claim to know who they are, and this is me. They don't know who they are.
I want to ask you something, and we can, we've got about 10 to 12 minutes left on this, but time flies. But philosophically, if we just step back for a minute, you know, I often think this is blowback to some degree. Like, we've created this global machine to get the goodies for ourselves and to crush many other people. And now it's blowing back on us. And in a way, that's kind of judgment. Like, I think that we're not meant to be saved from ourselves. I think that we're paying the price of having set up this genocidal machine and having profited from it. Like, you know, it's been mandatory vaccinations on Indian reservations since 1874. You can't refuse a shot or you go to jail. Well, they're doing it to us now, but where was our concern for them before now, right?
Wow.
So what are your thoughts? Any thoughts on any of that?
What's your point, though? Like, what's...
Well, the whole point of we are facing what we're reaping what we've sowed, as they say in the Bible. You know, we reap.
Oh God! So we're somehow responsible.
Well, we are responsible, right? To some degree, that's the difference between simply saying they are doing this to us, which never happens because everything always happens with our consent. They can pass all the statutes they want, but if we don't cooperate, there's no law, right? They have no power. But it's easy to think in terms of I'm just a victim. But when you say, no, I've colluded in this crime, I have to look in the mirror. When you're saying, who's the enemy? Let's start by looking in the mirror. And the extension
Wow, nice. Well, your play addresses that in a beautiful way, and you're right. You're right. Like, yeah, we have to take responsibility for the part that we all played, not just one or two people. We've all played a part in numbing down and, you know, assuming that all going to work out and that we have no responsibility in any of it. When we've seen us in Canada, we've seen indications for 50 years about what they treat the native kids like in our school. We've seen all of this being rolled out forever, but we always look the other way, and me included, yep. You know. I mean, I had a good native friend in elementary school, but what, I get a badge for that? Well, of course not. This guy I gotta tell you this poem.
Yep.
He was my best friend at the time. We're in grade 6, I think. I gotta tell you this though. This guy, I don't remember his name, but we were doing what our teacher at the time wanted us to do, what she considered to be a haiku poem. It's a Japanese poem, right? And this guy was pretty much my best friend in elementary school at that time. And what he wrote was, you gotta listen, man, please. This is his poem. A tiny drop fights to escape the faucet, but all of its energy goes down the drain.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that crazy?
Well,
he was like 11 when he wrote it.
Right.
In other words, for him as a native guy growing up in Canada, he tries and tries and tries, and yet somehow he believes that all of his energy will just go down the drain.
Well, it will, because he's a target of a planned genocide machine that's never stopped. And any of us who try to stand with him, we get targeted by the same machine. That's the reality, and that's why nobody wants to listen to people like you and me. You know, listen politely, but where's the support, you know?
Yeah, we're freaks. We're going to rub off on them. We're the lepers.
Yeah, it's the leper complex, but
yeah.
In a way,
well,
none
you know,
of that
let's
matters.
Change that. Let's do your play. Let's get a stage built someplace. I'd love to do it in Brantford, where you went and had the dig all those years ago. And found native children's bones and everything. Let's make a stage right there where the dig was done, and let's perform your genius great play Because honestly, your play, I've been an actor, writer guy forever. I'm not kidding you, man. Your play is as good as it gets. Now, with some good actors, that play, if that play doesn't impact people, then you know what? Just kill me right now. You know, I'll just give up. But that play is as good as it gets. And you don't even know about writing plays that much. I mean, you haven't written, like, you know, you're not an Obie Award winner like an ex-girlfriend of mine. Like, you did this, and I think you were, like, divinely guided or something, because your play is, it's beautiful.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's important. Thank you for that, Steve. And
yeah, just pay me later, will you?
Oh, yeah, well, you know, I don't have much money, but despite what you, on the internet, of course, I have lots of money because I've ripped up all these homeless Indians, remember? That's one of the smears.
Right.
I've got a private jet.
Oh, yeah,
all the
Kevin Annett's the worst piece of crap because, yeah, he made all this money on his documentary, or he made all this money in the book that he wrote.
Well, actually, I give out the documentary
in the
book.
I've known you for over 10 years. You have a kind of crappy-looking van. You've been sleeping on couches. You travel around. Occasionally, you might get a motel, but usually you sleep in your van. Like, what the F do people think Kevin Annett is? Like, who do they think you are? And why would they ever assume that you're making all this bank?
Steve, let me respond, okay? Martin Luther King had this quote just before he died, was killed, with the collusion of some of his friends, I might add, which we can mention, but he said, at the end, we will not remember the lies of our enemies, but the silence of our friends. And that is my experience. The reason these smears are working and the reason this truth is being buried is because of everyone listening and everyone who hasn't taken a part and is willing to stand back and let a few people bear the burden and not lose their privileges. We have all caused this. This is my point earlier. Every person who doesn't act is colluding. And they're responsible. If they say, hey, Kevin, it's too bad the truth of what you brought out isn't getting out, I'll say, well, it's because of you. What have you done? What have you done to stop this? You know, if you're concerned about getting a needle shoved in your arm, why weren't you concerned when it was happening to a little kid 20 years ago on a reservation? Because people knew, right? All this stuff has been known. You know, I remember one woman said to me, oh, we didn't know what was happening in the residential school. I said they were incinerating bodies. You know, 50% of the children never came back, and they burned up a lot of the bodies.
Exactly.
You know what?
What's your excuse for
burning flesh
for miles? Never coming back to the reserve. How do you rationalize that away?
Well,
you know, you can't. But they
did. Ability for
just like they rationalize my demise and everything that's happened to me and you. It's like, oh, he was just he was making too much money off the book that he wrote. I mean.
Okay,
are you kidding me? You didn't make any money off your book, your doc. I mean, maybe a few coins, but hardly anything. Maybe enough to cover production costs. I mean,
well, that's always been my
joke.
My mistake has always been, you know, trusting people too much and thinking they're going to do what they say, and that's not the reality with most people. No, and that's not a cynical remark. That's one based on experience, over and over and over, not. You know, a jaded remark. I'm not jaded at all because I've learned to trust the higher power and myself and nobody else. Any final words? We've got a few minutes left.
Okay. Final words is, anyone listening that wants to be involved in Kevin's play, and either myself or Kim will direct it, You really need to get involved somehow. This needs to be done. It needs to be done. It's as bad as, you know, if I die in a month, I want to get the play done before I get assassinated. Like, it's that kind of urgency to do Kevin's play. How many chances have you had? People are interested. These little cuckholes in Toronto, Vancouver, wherever they are, and they really are you know, enthusiastic. My God, what a great play. And they all back off because you use phone or email to contact people, and somebody comes in and shuts it down. Now, that could sound like a conspiracy, But I've lived this, people. And so I know exactly what Kevin's talking about.
Well, thanks, Steve. You know, we're going to give listeners updates about this because it's definitely a project we're working on as part of pulling back the lid on the real nature of the COVID police state, where it came from, who's guiding it, and what its ultimate aim is. You know, it isn't necessarily extermination. It's absolute control. I said often we're homo sapiens, human beings are becoming homo machina, part of a machine.
What does that mean?
Homo machina.
Homo machians?
Machina in Latin, it means machine man. It means our neurons are being wired into a machine. Yes.
Right. Well, that's why people should see my film, The Spark, which is buried. You probably can't find it, but it's on Vimeo. The Spark, Steven Schellenberger, Kim Ange, she produced it. And people need to see the film to understand. I wrote it and did it like 5 years ago. It's so relevant today, just like Kevin's play is. It's like it's all about the transhumanist agenda, AI. What do you think that is, people? What do you think AI is? What do you think transhumanism is? And then you got little pricks like Elon Musk naming their car company Tesla. Tesla, who died broke and had most of his inventions stolen from him.
Like, and his entire family was killed.
It's just so comical if it wasn't so tragic.
Tesla's whole family were murdered in the Catholic-run Yasanovich death camp in Croatia.
Yeah, I didn't even know that. That's, doesn't surprise
me. Yeah, ordered directly from the Pope to kill all Serbs because they weren't Catholics. They were Orthodox.
Of course.
So, you know, again, murderbydecree.com, folks. Steve, I love that you've been on. You got to come back. We're going to do more of this, all right?
Okay, let's get the play done, man. Let's get the play up and running. We can make this happen. We just need a little bit of support. And it doesn't have to be financial. It might be someone that lives nearby in Ontario that wants to get involved and help out and contribute, like their time, energy, whatever. This play needs to be made. It does. And all the people that backed out on you, I'm not backing out on you because guess what? Everyone always backs out on me. I've got nothing to lose. It's
right.
A play about the truth. Really, that's essentially it. And it's
nothing
a great play. It's a great play, man. All right.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks for being on the show. We'll have you back soon.
Okay. All right.
Bye for now. And we're going to end, we've got about 5 minutes left, but I wanted to actually read a short little excerpt for you. Oh, by the way, if you want to get involved in the production of A Land of No One, just write to me, angelfire101@protonmail.com, angelfire101@protonmail.com. And it's called The Land of No One because that was a term, a very ironic term, the church came up with that said anyone who isn't a Catholic doesn't exist, therefore the land they occupied are the land of no one. Really what they were describing was themselves, what they were trying to turn our country into was literally a land of no one, because I remember when I worked among the Nuchelnuth people on the West Coast as a minister, the first thing one of their elders told me was, our name for white people are the ghost people. They're not anyone. They don't have their soul. They don't have their substance. And so I think the land of no one is really an appropriate name because it's really a self-description as well. But we have the ability to recover ourselves, and that's the whole point of this. But I want you, when you get a copy of the play, read the last dialogue between Oliver Pierpoint, the doctor, and Josh Bennett, the reporter, because Oliver Pierpoint describes how the vaccination program is a way to complete the final integration of the human psyche into a global corporate machine. And, you know, they started out using homeless people and Indians in the drug testing protocols, which was all true. It happened all over the West Coast and places like the Lakehead Psychiatric Hospital, the Allen Memorial Institute in Montreal, all of it documented. But they then realized that a chemical approach to mind control doesn't work because the human body is too variable. But they then turn to electronics, and that's the whole point of the iPads. It's a way to modulate human brain waves into a purely analytical medium that can then be controlled literally by modulating everyone through a machine. and modulating what they think and feel. This is the reality we're in now, and this is, explains the effectiveness of the censorship and the absolute shutdown. And like I say, when people are turned off the work we do, they don't just, you know, 20, 30 years ago, one or two of them would, you know, when they're subject to a smear campaign, a few people end up coming back and saying, you know, Kevin, I'm really sorry, but somebody threatened me, threatened my wife, whatever. But now it not only happens immediately and to everyone, but the same program is in place where everyone is simply gone. They're just, they never contact me again. There's never any contact at all. Like, there's a program governing everybody who has anything to do, not simply with me, but the whole issue. And unless we're aware that there's this degree of mind control going on, then we won't be able to develop the antidote to it, the resistance. And I'm telling you, everything is energy. We are energy. If we learn to control our thoughts, control our own energy, we have the ability to fight and defeat this, because the people doing this are very weak as human beings. And they're very dependent on the machine. They can't think outside the machine. We can outmaneuver it because we have retained our minds and our souls. So I want to end on that note and remind people that murderbydecree.com is a site. Go to amazon.com, put in Kevin Annett, and read and order the play, The Land of No One. We're going to be doing casting and other activities related to it. But most importantly, it's part of the bigger campaign leading into the fall of reasserting the independence and sovereignty of the Republic of Canada. We'll be issuing our own Republic passports on September 8th in just 1 week, just over a week. Contact us, Republic National Council at protonmail.com, to take out citizenship. Get your passport. At that point, you're a citizen of a different nation. If they try to impose anything on you, it's literally an act of war by a foreign power, and we can resist them on that basis. And we are training sheriffs. We are prepared to take action by any means to defend our sovereign liberties, the lives of our children, and our land. This is a war, and as Steve and I have demonstrated, it's only people who are under fire who recognize the extent of the war. And so we are here every week as a way to inspire and organize everyone. Republic National Council at protonmail.com. Write to me, angelfire101 at protonmail.com. Thanks, Steve Shellen, for being the guest today. And also, final message about the closing song. I just thought it was appropriate to play this song. It's what we plan to do to the British Crown, the Ballad of New Orleans. Thank you, everyone. Until next week, stay strong, stay clear.